Okay, so welcome to our, what are we on, fifth shiur of our 18-hour shiur. Feel free to, get breakfast. The sources are in the back. So just introductory announcements here. So first of all, again, a thank you to those who've come, to those who are watching online. To our sponsors for the program overall, first to Serena and David Koshitsky, who dedicated in memory of Riva Koshitsky, Zichrona Lebracha, and to the Weinbaum Foundation. This year has been sponsored anonymously, the Refua Shalema, Devora Rus, Bas Chaya Dabrusa. Thank you to Or Chaim for hosting, to Peter for recording. I put this for a minute on Facebook Live also, just to remind people that we have this. I will turn it off, because this is disconcerting, having two cameras on me. Today, in addition to showcasing the programs that we have throughout the year, is also a fundraiser for our university programming for male students here every day at Or Chaim and at Ulpana Arot every morning. If you'd like to donate, there are cards at the front. You can do it online. As of last night, I haven't checked since then, we had raised $7,000. We didn't match to $14,000. So today's shiur, is the issue of halachic Israel. Should the state have prisons? So one of the things that we focus on throughout the year is discussing halachic and hashkafic issues that relate to the state of Israel. It's one of the, if you look at the bottom of our flyers, you'll see there are five circles, and one of them is Israel. Last year, we had a series on Israel-related issues here at Or Chaim, Beit Midrash nights on Monday nights. We had a series in the spring at Shomrei Shabbos. As I said, one of the goals of today is to showcase the different types of shiurim we have throughout the community. So, you can keep your eyes out, and we have other shiurim of this sort throughout the year. Okay, so what I want to do is deal with the question of whether, if Israel were a halachic state, whether it should have prisons. Israel, being at the moment a secular state with a religious component, perhaps, does have prisons, which is a staple of the Western world, of the penal system. But the question was posed to many poskim, and I've put at the end a summary from about six different poskim, of whether in fact this is correct, meaning does halacha believe that this is a proper form of punishment? And what we're going to do is we're going to start with the psukim, then we're going to go to Gemaras, we're going to do a little bit of poskim, then we're going to get to modern day thinkers to see what they think. Before we do that, if I asked you, why would one have prison, right? What is the goal of having a prison? So there can be several. So one I've already mentioned is punishment. But there are other reasons that we have prisons. For example, temporary holding for whatever reason. We think someone might be dangerous. We're afraid he's going to run away, suspected of a crime, and we want to hold him until he can be tried. Right? So what we call a holding court, right? A holding cell. Right? So in addition to punishment, a holding cell. What else do we have?
Permanent holding if you can't execute.
Right, right. So that would either be holding or punishment, right? Somewhere on the border.
Keeping away dangerous people.
Right, keeping away dangerous people, right? Which, could be a prison, could also be an asylum, and we'll see that it'll actually be relevant. What else? Sometimes we use it as a motivator, right? You can be held in contempt, right? You haven't committed a crime per se. You're not listening. We want you to do something. You're refusing to listen to the court. So we put you in jail as soon as you agree to do what you're supposed to do. So then we would take you out, right? It's not a punishment per se. It's a motivator. So the question is, does halacha believe in any or all of these? Okay. So let's start with the psukim. The first page plus is psukim or mefarshim on psukim. So what evidence do we have? So the first source that I will point to, the first time we'll discuss prison is in source 1. So here, this is the case of the Mikalel, of the blasphemer. So, Vayikov ben ha-Yisraelis is Hashem v'kalel v'aviv ozol Moshe v'shem imo shalmiz bas divri l'mate don. So there was a person, he was the son of Divoriz bas, of shalmiz bas divri, and he blasphemed, he cursed God, and they didn't know what to do with him. Vayenachu b'mishmar lifrosh lohem al pi Hashem. So they put him in prison to hold him, to ask God what they should do for him. So here we have prison, but the role of prison here is clearly, or seemingly, if I asked you, what is the role of prison here? It's a holding cell, right? But for a very specific type of person. A person who has clearly already committed a crime, and you know that. That's not in question. The question is how to punish him. Right? So all we have evidence from is that you are allowed to use a holding cell, but for someone who is clearly guilty, you just don't know how to sentence him. Now, even that's not so clear, because the Hamik Davar says, no, that's not why they put him in prison at all. The Netziv denies that we even derive that much from here. And he says, Vayenechu bishleimut b'lo shum chisaron eiver o briyot. They put him whole, without any damage to his body. Umachmach alal ritzonam shelo shomim la'akot la'aziko al-kol panim. Why did they put him in prison? Because imagine the scene. You have a religious society and a guy gets up and blasphemes and curses God. So what did everyone want to do? They heard him. They wanted to hurt him. So what did you have to do? You had to lock him up, not as a holding cell, but to protect him because he was now in danger. Gam terem megili de beidin mishum kach and yikub b'shleimut b'mishmar v'lo nagu bo lira'a ad bo devar Hashem. So they put him there to be held until he could actually be sentenced. So, the simple read of the Psukim would at least give us evidence that you're allowed to use prison as a holding cell for someone who's guilty of a crime until he manages to be sentenced, but the Netziv denies even that, and at least from here only has a source for using prison to protect not society, but the criminal. But the simple read of the Psukim is we at least have a proof that you're allowed to use prison as a holding cell for a guilty party, which doesn't get us very far, because standard Western society uses prison for a holding cell for people who are suspected, not proven, to have committed a crime, and we use it as punishment. We have no evidence from here whether that's okay. So the next source, in Bamidbar Tes Vav, Vayihu b'nei Yisrael Bamidbar v'yem tu ish mikoshesh etzimim ha-shabbat. So once they had another person who violated Shabbos by cutting down trees, branches on Shabbos. So this time they knew that the death penalty, as the Gemara will point out, they knew that there was a death penalty that came with Chilul Shabbos. What didn't they know? Which death penalty? So vayinicho, so b'mishmar, ki lo parash, ma yase lo. So they put him in jail because they didn't know what to do with him. Now this is even more limited. Here we have a holding cell who we even know that he's getting the capital punishment. The only thing we don't know is what capital punishment. So again, this is a very limited proof. All it tells us is that for a temporary period of time, while you're trying to figure out what someone who's already is known to have committed a capital crime, he can be put in jail until you decide which punishment to give him. And Rashi, right, clarifies this. V'lo'nichu mikoshesh imo. These two stories actually happened at the same time, and they didn't put them together. They knew that this guy was put to death. They didn't know which death. In the case of the blasphemer, they knew nothing. They just knew he did something wrong. They didn't even know that he was going to be punished. So they had to put him in jail until they found out what would happen. They didn't know whether he was liable for the death penalty or not. Now we're going to come back to the point that he didn't put them in the same cell at the end. Just keep that in mind. But so far, most of the discussions you'll see will surround these two psukim. And you'll see people will say, look, the Torah has two examples of prison, and they're only temporary holding cells for people who are clearly guilty of a crime. You just need to know how to punish them. That doesn't, is not nearly robust enough to prove that there can be a prison system in the sense that it exists in the modern world or in modern Israel. Where, by the way, do we have, I'll do this a little bit out of order, I had it in this sheet. Where do we have proof of a robust prison system? We have at least two rayos in Torah, and neither of them would tell us that it's a good thing to have a prison. If you look at number 9, Vayikach Adonai Yosef Oso, right, Joseph is thrown in prison, he's put in the jail. That's where the prisoners of the king were kept, and they left him there. Now that doesn't prove very much. That proves, in fact, as we'll see from Moshe Tzuriel, this proves the opposite, right? You have two pieces of evidence of Jews putting in prison as a holding cell. The only evidence you have of permanent prison is the non-Jews, right? Is Paro. So that would further emphasize the fact that the Torah doesn't support the notion of prison qua punishment. You do have another one, actually, in Ezra, in number 10, where the king gives Ezra power, right? He puts him in charge in his mandate in Israel, and he gives him power, and he said, "Va'ant Ezra kechachmas elakach diviyadach." Ezra, who you have, right? You have divine wisdom. So mani shvatin v'dayanin di lehon. Da'inun l'chol amei divavar nehar l'chol yadei datach elakach v'di lo yadat tohodon. Right, so appoint judges to judge the people in Israel. And the people who know the laws of God and those who don't know it, teach it to them. V'chol di lo leheve oved data di elakach v'data di malka asapra dina l'avei mit aved minehin lemot hein l'shorshi hein la'anosh nichsin v'lesarin. And if anyone doesn't obey either the king or God, he'll be punished by dispatch, death, corporal punishment, confiscation of possessions, or imprisonment. So here, Ezra, who's a Jew, is given the power to imprison. The problem is, he's given the power from a non-Jewish king, and Ezra provides no proof that he ever used this power. Okay? So many people simply point out that if you look, we have two pieces of evidence of a holding cell for someone who's clearly guilty. We have one piece of evidence that the non-Jews use prison, and one that the non-Jews give permission to Jews to use prison, but there seems to be no evidence in the Psukim that the Torah believes in a prison system as punishment. The exception to this, with which Roger Weiss points out, though some of the earlier writers do not, is there does seem to be one case where we do, though it's not clear, and that's number 5. So, at some point, Moshe doesn't know what to do with the Jews. So he says, I have had it. I cannot deal with this anymore. I can't deal with them by myself. So God says, okay, so I'm going to give you 70 zikenim. Now, there's a problem, right? You have 12 shvatim, so each of them are going to provide 6. That's going to get you to 72. That means two of them, right? Two of the shvatim only get 5. So you have these 72 potential people who are going to prophesy, and then 70 of them prophesy, and then 2 people continue to prophesy in the middle of the machane. And that is in number 5. They start prophesying. The correct word is prophesying, right? It just is. I don't know why. But I think prophesizing has now made it into the dictionary. But the original one was prophesying. But anyways, so they are prophesying. So the Na'ar Yoshua runs to Moshe, they're prophesying. What? Stop them. Moshe, my master, kila'aim. Now what does kila'aim possibly mean? Kela, right? Beit HaKela, a prison, imprison them. And here it sounds like possibly punishment. Possibly. Right? But this is very ambiguous because, A, it's not clear what kla'im means, as we'll see. And 2, it's not clear, even if it means a prison, why they would have been put there. So if you look, it might mean prison and it might mean for punishment. Yeah.
Or if it was ever done to suggest.
Well, right. So no, Moshe says, I won't do it, but that's because they're not doing something wrong. But he doesn't, right? The proof seems to be that there was this notion that prison would have been a possible thing. Right? Moshe turns it down because they weren't doing anything wrong. He's like, no, I wish everyone would be a prophet. Fine. Okay. But what does the word kalem mean? So Rashi is quoting Chazal's 2 possibilities. Hatel aleim tzorchei tzibor veim kalem aleim. One possibility is make him do public work and they will kalem aleim. They'll be destroyed or they'll stop prophesying by themselves, which might mean, right, put them in slave labor, which I guess is sort of a proof of sorts for some sort of prison. Though the Marsha notes that may not be what he's saying, right? He says al derek drash, which maybe he means pshat, I'm not really sure, that What it means is, fine, they want to be prophets, sure, make them rabbis. See how long they want to continue being rabbis. They will stop prophesying if you actually put them in charge of people. They'll quit. But okay, assume that it means what it sounds like, imprison them. Davar acher, tnei mel bet akela. The second one really is, Rashi says, put them in prison. Lefisha mitnabim Moshe meit v'Yoshua machnis Israel aretz. Because he was saying, Moshe will die, and Yoshua will bring the Jews into the land of Israel. So here, Rashi clearly quotes a tradition from Chazal that understands this as prison and seemingly for punishment. Though even that's not clear, because it could just mean, right, as you said, they're a danger to society while they're saying this, right? I don't want anybody to hear them, right? Maybe when they stop prophesying, I'll let them out. So we, again, don't have a robust proof from this pasuk. Besides for that, if you look at the Ramban, or the Dat Zakenim, you'll see that there are many other possibilities. So, for example, in 8, I'll skip the Ramban. He said, "Ulai ruach sheker b'fiyam, a ruach ra mifatam." Meaning, "Tzrichon l'shumam b'vid akela ki ish mishuga mitnabe." The Ramban says, "Yes, it is a cell, but it's not a prison, because he said maybe, right? They're false prophets, so they're basically right. They're crazy, right? This isn't prophecy; it's insanity; it's visions." If that's the case, you have to lock them up, not in a cell. You need to put them in an asylum, right? So it's not clear either for the Ramban that even if this is a cell, that it's prison, and that it's punishment. And the Dat Zakenim in 7 says, Lefish Amar Kalej Baruch Hu, Shivim Ish Bilvad Yu Nivim, Vaya Nar Savursha Ya'ayin Bilol Darame Darvim Kain, Nivi E Shekereim Ulakach Amar Klaim. He says it was prison, but a holding cell. Because he said, why would you put them in jail? Not because they're punished. But because remember that math I said before, right? 6 times 12 is 72. But there's only supposed to be 70 Zakenim. That means two of them have to be false prophets. And Yoshua was scared by their prophecy, so he said, they must be the false ones. So why did he say put them in prison? Not permanently as a punishment for saying that Moshe is going to die, but temporarily until we figure out whether these two are the two excluded from the 72, and this is false prophecy. But if it turns out it's true, we'll let them go. So for the Dat Zakenim, it's a cell, but a holding cell. For the Ramban, it's a cell, but it's an asylum, not prison. And even for Rashi, only one of his two positions is prison. So from the Psukim, there's very little evidence that the Torah believes in having a expansive system of prisons. And the Gemara, in number 11, now that we will transition to the Gemara, does expand from this Gemara. It does say that, yes, we learn that there is a notion of prison in Torah, but it's limited to cases of holding cells. And if you look at 11, Tanu Rabbanan, et zu darash Rabbi Nechemya. So the case here is as follows. If you strike someone, and now it's unclear whether they're going to die or not, right? You struck them hard. If they die, you're a murderer. If not, then you're not a murderer. You pay damages. But how are you supposed to know while the person's on his right is in the hospital if he's going to die? In which case, it was murder or not? It was just assault. So clearly, what are you going to do at that moment? You are going to run, right? You don't want to be there in case he dies. You are now liable for murder. So Rav Nechemya says, it says im yakum vitalech b'chutz al mishanto v'nika maket. If the guy leaves. Right, if the guy recovers and gets up and walks away, so the one who hit him won't be put to death. He's only guilty of assault and not murder. And the Gemara says, "V'chitala al daitach shezem mahalech b'shuk v'zen arag." That's obvious. If the guy lives, you don't get put to death. So what is the pasuk teaching us? So the Gemara says, "Ela zesh amdu lemita ve'akel mimash shehaya ulach gachich berumet shu patur." So maybe it's someone who you thought would survive, meaning the strike, the assault wasn't enough to kill him, but then things got worse and he did die. So you're not liable for murder in that case, because you didn't actually, right, he shouldn't have died from that, there were complications, but it's not your fault. So that's the first possibility. V'rabbanan hayvini kamai kamai darshi bay, but what did the Rabbanan learn from this? They say no. Milamei shechov shinoto. It says that if the guy lives, you let him go. You let the person who was guilty of assault go. What does that mean? Where was he until now? Choshinoto, he was in prison. Why? Because you didn't know what he was guilty of yet, assault or murder. And therefore, until you would find out whether this was going to be assault or murder, you imprisoned him. And how do they know? Reb Nechemya, Chavisha Minale, how do you know you can do that? Yalif mi mikoshesh. We learn it from the person who caught on Shabbos. Rabbanan nami lilfi mi mikoshesh. And the Rabbanan should learn from mikoshesh. They shouldn't need it from here. So the Gemara says, no, mikoshesh bar katolahu moshe lava yada katolah b'mai. The Rabbanan say, look, the mikoshesh teaches us that someone who we know is guilty of a capital crime can be put in a holding cell. This halacha teaches us more. Someone who's guilty of any crime, and we're waiting to see what crime was committed, you can put him in a holding cell also. So that's a third case. You can't learn that from the mikoshesh. But that just emphasizes the fact that mikoshesh and the migadef, the mikalel, teach us holding cells for someone who's already liable for capital punishment. And the case of the person guilty of assault is a slightly more expansive case. It teaches you that you can put someone in a holding cell while you're figuring out whether it was mere assault or it was actually murder. Right? La fuke haidlo yadini bar katalu, la bar katalu, Rabbi Nechemia yalef min legadef. And Rabbi Nechemia says, learn that from Megadef. Because the Megadef, as we said, they didn't know whether it was a capital offense or not. So it is parallel to this case of who was guilty of assault. They don't know whether it was assault or murder. And the Rabbanan say that was a special, that was an ad hoc decision, but it doesn't prove anything in general. But however you work it out, what comes out is that Rav Nechemia and the Rabbanan learn from some combination of these three cases, right? The person who's guilty of assault, which might lead to murder. The case of the Mekalel, the one who cursed, the blasphemer, and the one who violated Shabbos, that you're allowed to use prison as a holding cell. A holding cell for someone who might have committed a capital punishment, capital crime, someone who definitely committed a capital crime, but you don't know how to punish him. But bisofo shel davar, in the end of the day, all we have is a holding cell for someone who has committed a either capital crime or near capital crime. That's it. That's all the evidence we have. Yeah.
What about
your... So I left it out, but we will come back to it. Yes, okay. So I will address it quickly now, but we'll see that it'll come back. Right. One of the cases which looks sort of like prison is Ir Mikla, is that someone who kills by accident...
Yeah, he wanted to change the phone.
Oh, okay. Change the phone.
I guess... Sideways.
Yeah. Like that?
Yeah.
Okay. So, So Ir Mikla is sort of like prison, right? Someone who killed by accident, you put him in a city, you lock him up in a city until Admot Kohen HaGadol. As we will see later, it's also a limited case. It's only for someone, right, who's guilty of manslaughter. Part of the goal of it is to protect him, right, from the Gaol Adam. And as we'll see, Moshe Tsuria will address this. It's not really prison in the classic sense. He can't leave the city, but his family moves to the city. It's a fully functional city. He just can't leave it. But there are other people who live there, right? Levim are allowed to live there. So all you're telling me is he has to live in a specific city, which is not quite prison, right? In a, four by four meter cell or whatever it is, right? Feet would be hard. Right, that was the awkward moment when they asked this to the head of the person in charge of the prison system. The stage was asked in a Senate hearing how big solitary confinement is, and he had no idea, and he guessed it was 4x6, I think, but it is 6x10, I think. Okay, but it's a little bit different. But we're going to come back to it. Yes, Moshe Tsuriel deals with it at the end. Okay, now if I ask you, okay, if it's a holding cell. So give me another option. If the only goal of prison is a holding cell, until we know what someone's going to do. So what do modern courts do, right? What is our equivalent of a holding cell? Sometimes we have holding cells, but sometimes we have something else, which is bail, right? Bail, right? If the goal of the Torah is just to hold up the criminal till we figure out whether he's guilty, so why do we have a holding cell at all? Just have bail. So lest you think the Torah didn't, the Chazal didn't think of it, they did in 12. Shomea ani yitain arevim v'yitayel b'shuk. Why don't you just let the guy pay bail, and then he can walk free? Talmud lomar im yakom v'italeich b'chutz magin shechovshin oto ad shemarpei. No. We don't believe in bail. We do believe in holding cells, right? So it's not just that you might believe in a holding cell. We, according to the Mechilta, actively believe in holding cells over other ways of incentivizing the guy to make sure he's here for trial. Now, that could be limited to capital crimes because you assume that the guy would leave the bail and run if his life is on the line, and maybe it's not true of monetary crime, right? Maybe for, or Malkus, right? Maybe he would stick around for Malkus. I don't know, right? The Mechilta doesn't prove one or the other, but the Gemara, but the Mechilta at least was aware of the possibility of bail and didn't love it, at least in the case of this assault potential murderer case. Okay. There is an exception, though. There is one case, or a series of cases, really, where the Gemara does seem to believe that we put somebody in prison as a form of punishment. And that is what's known as kippah. There are certain cases where we put someone in a cell. But here, as we'll see, it's not really a cell in the prison sense of the word. I mean, it is, but it's really a form of capital punishment. But let's see it inside. So in 13, Ella, Kaini ploni horagas is a nefesh. Vare edav shahoragas a nefesh. Yitav was aishav edav. Sorry, this was another case of the holding cell, right? You have evidence. Okay, no, I skipped one of my points. I have one more point to the holding cell. One more point to the holding cell. Okay, assuming we can have a holding cell. Good. How convinced do you have to be that a crime was committed to put somebody in a holding cell? So in Western, right, in America at least, I know, right, as soon as someone says he committed murder, he's guilty of rape, they throw him in jail right away. And maybe they give him bail, maybe they don't. But all someone has to do is suggest that someone committed a crime and he gets thrown in a holding cell. But from the evidence we have so far, what's the halacha? And how much evidence did we have in the case of the Megadev before we threw the guy in jail, the guy who blasphemed? We had 100% evidence. The only question was how to sentence him. How about the guy who violated Shabbos? 100%. How about the person guilty of assault? 100%. In all cases, it was only a holding cell until we got to court. But you know he committed the crime. The question is just fleshing out the details of what he's guilty of. But we don't have any evidence of what happens if he's suspected of a crime. Can you do that? Right? We don't even have evidence of that. So the Yerushalmi seems to say that in fact, it's as limited as it looks. Right? Elakeni ploni harikas anefesh, vare edav sharikas anefesh, yeitafus ad sheyavo edav. If a person killed and there are witnesses that he killed, he should be in prison until his witnesses came. The only case we use a holding cell is he murdered. There are witnesses, and we know that the witnesses are on their way to testify. So we're not sure, right? They haven't actually testified. It's not 100%. But there are witnesses on their way, right? They called into Beis Din, right? They've sent a messenger ahead. We're on our way from the Galil. We're coming to Yerushalayim to testify. So it's not quite 100%, but there's substantiated evidence. There are witnesses on their way. So does that tell us that even on the holding cell level, halacha doesn't believe in one of using a holding cell for someone who's suspected of a crime, merely suspected of a crime? According to Yerushalmi, it would seem that way. The Ran challenges this. If you look at Nir Midoch Yerushalmi, Shemechevin Shabo Edim Amr Levnei Beis Din Ploni Gidev Avo Bishlo Kiblo Eduzim Chov Shano So. I'm sorry, he supports this. Lo bawa eidim lefaneinu, eino bedin lechov sho levazoso chinam. Okay. The Ran, though, notes, the Yerushalmi makes it sound like as soon as you know the witnesses are coming, even if they haven't testified, the Ran doesn't even say that. Right? The Ran has a different girsa in the Yerushalmi, different text in the Yerushalmi that says, no, the witnesses have to be here, they just can't have testified yet. So you have a range, right? We have cases where it's clear the person committed a crime, but you haven't sentenced him. Those are the psukim and the gemaras. You have a Yerushalmi, which seems to say all you need to know is that there are witnesses, which is still a high bar, but not an impossibly high bar, right? You know there are witnesses, but they're not here yet. And the Ran says, no, I don't even agree with that. It's a wrong gears on the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi saying, even then, the witnesses have to be here, they just can't have testified yet. But if they're just witnesses somewhere, that's a mere, right, that he's merely suspected, right, and that doesn't even count. So even on the level of holding a cell, even if you take the more expansive read of the Yerushalmi, what you would have is it's legitimate to use a holding cell for someone who you know there are witnesses on their way to testify and you're holding him until you get a court date, which is far less expansive than anything that exists in America, Canada, or modern Israel. Okay, now what about punishment? Can prison ever be punishment? So here, as I said, we have these few cases of kippah. So what? When does one go to kippah? So the Gemara says, the Mishnah says as follows: Mishalaka vishana bezin machnizna zol kippah machilano so seoren achikrezo mitbakat. If someone has violated a prohibition for which you get malchus, for which you get lashes twice, and then he did it again, so he sins a third time, Bezdin puts him in the cell with barley bread until his stomach bursts. And as the Gemara will explain, I won't make you read it inside, but what we do is we put him in a tiny little cell, about this big, right, where he can barely sit, barely stand, whatever. We give him dry barley on an empty stomach until his stomach is filled up. Then we give him water, and it expands in his stomach and crushes his internal organs, and he dies. Okay, not pretty. Now, problem is, so now we have a proof. It sounds very clear, a proof of prison as punishment. But not really, because this is prison, which is really another way of accomplishing the death penalty. Right? So we have the two extremes. We have, right, very limited use of prison in holding cells, and then all of the other extremes, we have certain crimes which we can't actually put you to death, so we orchestrate the death penalty in a backhanded sort of way. But in the middle, right, the notion of putting someone in prison for an extended period of time, as that being an end in and of itself, the punishment is the prison, right, we don't have. Right, we have this sort of death penalty at one extreme and a holding cell at the other. Just to see the parameters of this, or the Gemara says that this is only a certain type of prohibition. It's only one that you get kares for, right? It's only severe crimes that you would get spiritual excision for. Because then on a spiritual level, you already deserve death. So that's why we kill you. But a regular sin, you couldn't. So, okay, we can give a whole shear on kippah. But the point is, for extreme enough crimes, for egregious enough crimes, we create a way of putting you to death without actually putting you to death. So, again, that's a little bit, right, for modern ears, that sounds a little bit cruel, possibly. But again, what's clear is that we have nothing in between, right? And then the next Mishnah tells you that usually when did you use this? For hahorig nefesh below edim. If someone is a murderer, but you can't prove it, he doesn't have witnesses, or he has one witness, or the witnesses were his relatives, or whatever the case may be, right? Machilin ozo lechem saromayim lachatz. So then, right, you feed him this, right, this very little in the water, etc. And the Gemara says, so if there are no witnesses, how do you know? Bino yadin and amarab eidim yuchedet. There were two witnesses who saw him, but not together. So they can't actually testify together, but there are witnesses. So he gets off on a technicality, but he's a dangerous murderer, right? Shmuel Amar Shlo Basra, where he murdered 100 witnesses, but they didn't warn him. So the Gemara says a series of different cases where he's guilty of murder. We know he's guilty of murder, but he gets off on a technicality, so then we orchestrate his death penalty through this prison system, so to speak, through kippah. And that's how we end up killing him, getting him off the street. Now, again, so if we ask, do we have any proof in Torah for a prison system where prison is the punishment? It's very hard. Because at one extreme, you have holding cells, right? Which maybe you can put someone in when they already know they did the crime, maybe not even then. At the other extreme, you have, right, a backhanded way of executing someone who's guilty of a capital crime. Right? The middle, which is, you know, in America, where I forget the number, it's an exorbitant number, something like 2 million people in the United States, I think it's 2 million, are incarcerated, right? The notion that that should be your primary form of punishment, right, for extended periods of time, for possibly minor crimes, right? I know Canada is now starting to waive some of these, right? People who are in there for drug violations, they're right by whatever they call it here, they're pardoning them. Whatever mechanism the Prime Minister has, right, in advance of legalizing marijuana, they're letting marijuana-related criminals go from prison, right? Am I right? I'm pretty sure when I was at the Israeli consulate, and you can't bring your phone, so there's newspapers, whatever is there, I read, right? So I believe that's what they're doing. And in the States, they're thinking of doing something similar. Or people are advocating for it because, you know, you have people could sell, right, a pound of, not a pound, that's a lot, an ounce of marijuana, right? And in the States, because of minimum sentencing laws, right, they could end up going to jail for a minimum of 10 years on a first offense, right? That, yeah, I see people saying that's crazy. Yes, 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 yes. This is actually something agreed upon by both parties, right? That this is a problem. Minimum sentencing has created bizarre situations where people, admittedly, it's a crime, but they're going to be in prison for 10, 20 years, right, for a minor crime. That doesn't seem to exist in Torah at all. Okay, we do have another case of prison, which does exist in Torah, but this is not the holding cell, this is not the punishment, this is not the backhanded death penalty, it's the other one we mentioned, which was the contempt of court example, where we're just trying to get you to do something, right? We're trying to motivate you to do the right thing, but you're not there long term. So that's 16, right? Uminalan de kaftin vasrin avdin ardafa. If someone doesn't agree with to listen to the court challenges the messenger of the court, so we can fetter them, arrest them, and prosecute them. And the Rambam summarizes it. You can tie people's hands and feet up or put them in jail, or to push them on the ground. That's from Ezra. But again, that seems to be the totally different one, which is motivating someone to do the right thing. There is a bit of a question whether you can do this in all cases. What about monetary? Yeah, Ellie.
It says, the Rambam mentions this place called Beit Asurin. What is that place?
Oh, so that was what we did at the beginning. Is he's quoting the pasuk in Ezra that the king had given Ezra the right to use the power of putting someone in prison, but it was right. It was the non-Jewish king had given Ezra the right to use prison. Aaron, yeah. Presumably, right? We have no evidence of doing anything other than just putting them in a decent holding cell, I think. And we do have other evidence, by the way, of prison, but I didn't want to get into it. The one other one is when they put, right, Yirmiyahu into, right, that's a little bit of a different, like a royal prison because the king doesn't like it, but really he like lives in the palace and isn't allowed to leave. So not exactly the same, so we're going to leave that on the side. Okay. So now we have proof of the back-ended death penalty, the holding cell, motivating people to listen to the court. Now, what about someone who owes money and doesn't want to pay? Right? That's also a type of motivation, right? So can you hold him in contempt until he agrees to pay his loan? Right? He didn't commit a crime. He's just refusing to pay his loan, or he can't pay his debt. So what's the halacha? So in 18, the Gemara says, in the context of Karban Pesach, of all places, if someone's in prison and they promise him that he'll be out by Pesach, right? They promise him he'll be out by Pesach. So the question is, can you shech the Karban Pesach on his behalf? Can you assume that he in fact will be out of prison by Pesach? Can you believe that? So the Mishnah says, shoch the nalan, you can. You can shech the Karban Pesach, assuming he'll be out of prison. So the Gemara asks in the second line, Amar Rabba Barahuna, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Lo shanu ela beis ha'isurin de nachrim. Beis ha'isurin de Yisrael shochtin bifnei atzmo. Even our mission only says that you can only shecht for the person, you can only make him part of a Karban Pesach with others, because we sort of think that he'll get out in time, but we're not totally sure. So you can't shecht a new Karban Pesach for him, but you can include him in a group. So the Gemara says that's only a non-Jewish court that says he's going to get out by Pesach. But if he's in a Jewish prison, you know it's true, so you could shecht his own Karban Pesach, make his own sacrifice for him. Since the Jews say he'll be out, they'll get him out. As we say, the remnant of Israel shall not do iniquity nor speak lies. Okay. So what is this prison? So Rashi brings two possibilities. One is that it is the example we just saw. It's this temporary holding cell of the person who's in contempt of court. So it's a temporary holding cell for someone in contempt of court. And if court says, we want you to do the right thing, we're putting you in prison for 3 days until you shape up, and it's, you know, Yud Nisan. So when the court says you'll be out by Yudal, it may mean you'll be out by Yudal. That's one possibility, right? Look in 19. The other possibility, he says, is no. It's someone who won't give his wife a get, or someone who won't pay off a debt. Right? Kagon lekofalo to isha psul shali mamon. He doesn't want to give his wife a get, or he doesn't want to pay money. Inami kedetanya im yakum v'yisalech b'chutz. Not the holding court. The other one. The holding court from the person guilty of assault. Elam alame chachov shirzo achanira matehe alav. So you have this first position in Rashi that seems to think that you could use the holding cell to motivate someone to pay off a debt, right? And this we know historically always happened, to force people to give a get if they were trying to be ma'agin their wives. But again, we don't have evidence of prison as punishment. The one last avenue we have in the Gemara, which is possibly our only recourse then, is okay, well then how could modern Israel have prison?
Right, yeah. It's difficult because
yes,
because these things are all indefinite. It depends on
correct, people. Correct. And we're going to come back to whether this was actually halacha l'maisa. But yes, Rashi seems to now. The hope is it's not indefinite, right? That I mean, there are people in Israel who've been in jail for 10 years.
Rashi says that the case of putting somebody in jail that you tell him he's going to be out by Pesach,
right?
These are things that you have to wait for him to act. So you don't know anything.
Correct. So it sounds like not right. It sounds like he's you know, but if they say that you'll be out, right? It sounds like it's not right. It's because according to Gemara, it's after Chinu that you said you'll let him out. Okay, the last avenue we have is 20. Is right. This is always our go-to. Is that Tanhu Elazar ben Yaakov Omer Shamati Shebezden Makin Vonjin Shlom in Atorah. Bezden has another right, which is if they need to, they can punish in a way that's not dictated by the Torah. Below Lavar al Divrei Torah, like they lasa shagla Torah, not to destroy the Torah, but to protect it. So theoretically, even if everything we said is true and there's no evidence for prison in the Torah, one could argue that if they decide that it's necessary for a certain time, it would be permitted anyways because it's necessary. So that's our last avenue.
But it says onshin, it doesn't say prison.
Well, it doesn't say what onshin is, right? This is our right. So this is our potential opening. I'm not saying for sure. It's our potential opening. Okay, fine. How much time do we have? We have 15 minutes. Is that right? 15? Yeah, okay. So now let us... I'm going to hold questions, and then you know where to find me. I'm here all day. Okay, so... So now let's move. Let's see what people actually say. Okay, so let's do post-Talmudic authorities. What did we do historically? So let's take, for example, the case of the money, right? Someone who won't pay back his debt. Can you use it or not? So Shulchan Aruch quotes different positions. Even if someone explicitly says, I will borrow money, and if I don't pay it back, I will put myself in prison, it doesn't help. Shulchan Aruch paskins, no, we don't paskin like Rashi. So when you're going through, what do we have evidence for prison? Get rid of motivating someone to pay loans, right? Scratch that off your list. The Rama says, v'dafka shein lo l'shalem. I don't think that's true. I think it depends. If someone can't pay, we don't put him in prison. If someone can pay and doesn't, then the Rama thinks you can use it to motivate. Imprison him or beat him with an inch of his life until he agrees to do what he's supposed to do. The Yeshomrim, the Rama says, some people think some people say if he agreed to it, he agreed that he would be imprisoned until he paid back the loan, then he can be put in prison even if he can't pay back. Which the Rivash, I just note later, and I just put a summary of it, he originally didn't like this. He really didn't like it. But he said that seems to have been the custom historically, was that Jews actually did use prisons among themselves, even for people who couldn't pay back. So the Rivash was uncomfortable, but there is at least a history of people using prison in this limited fashion. Okay. Now, is there any proof, that prison, though, can be a punishment, right? We've seen varying ones on holding cells, on motivators for someone who can pay back, can't pay back, right? Using it as backhanded death penalty, but we have no evidence of anyone ever using it as a punishment per se. Until an offhanded comment by Rav Shrei Ragon in Hilchos Shabbos, right? Where if you look at 22... Shulchan Aruch quotes from Rav Shrei Ragon. The Rama really does. Ain't done in. Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to judge on Shabbos, and the Rama says v'lachein asur lidposu lachnis l'beis asor mishin eschayv eiza onesh kadesh lo yivrach. Therefore, it is forbidden to arrest someone and put them in prison, someone who deserves punishment so he doesn't flee. Now, let me ask you, right? If everything we said is true, that prison is just a holding cell, so do you think putting someone in a holding cell counts as judgment such that it shouldn't be done on Shabbos? It's a little bit weird, right? It's not a punishment. It's not judgment. You're holding him until you can judge. That's not din. And the Shvus Yaakov says this, and he says, I don't understand. Shreiragon, are you telling me that putting someone in a holding cell is punishment such that it's din? He says, I can't believe it. And he has a good proof. Tell me his good proof. It's a pasuk. What was our original proof? What? The Mekoshe Jason, the woodcutter. Shavuos Yaakov said, what are you talking about? The original case of prison in the Torah was Shabbos. And guess what? They put him in prison. Because, what? Right, on Sunday, it was Bein HaShemashah, it was a Shabbos. So you could get around it was Bein HaShemashah. Don't worry, the Achronim really do this. Right, it was Bein HaShemashahs, whatever. But but as some of the later writers note, in this offhanded comment by Rav Shreiragon, we've assumed the whole time that the Torah doesn't believe in punishment as prison as punishment. It's only a holding cell, or it's the death penalty, backhandedly. Or it's a motivator, but it's not judgment per se, it's not the punishment. And then Rav Shreiragon says, no, you misunderstood, even the holding cell is din. So, that seems to be the one little piece of evidence that maybe, the Torah believes in temporary prison, which also serves as a punishment, right? Because the cases, as we saw, were people who were guilty of crimes. They just hadn't been sentenced yet. So he seems to have viewed that as partially a holding cell, partially a punishment. But that's about the tenuous thing that we have to hang on, and that's a temporary thing for someone who's known to be guilty, and it's still in the day a holding cell. And the Shvus Yaakov, to begin with, points out that it goes against a pasuk in the Torah, which makes it not the world's greatest evidence, despite the fact that Shulchan Aruch does, in fact, quote it. So then, we're going to jump now to modern thinkers. Okay, so if you are a rabbi and they come to you and say, should the modern state of Israel have prison? Yes or no? They do, but should they? So, as punishment, not as a holding cell, right? Not as a holding cell. A holding cell, fine. Right, if we go through the things that prisons are used for, a holding cell, fine. How much evidence do you need? So if you follow the strict letter of the Gemara, you need substantiated evidence, not proof, but at least, even if we take the Yerushalmi, you need to know there are witnesses on their way, but not a mere rumor, right? So you could only put people in a holding cell if there was substantiated reason to believe that they were guilty of a crime. You could put them in there for contempt of court, temporarily, to convince them to do the right thing. You could put them in there if they were being ma'agin their wife. Maybe if they didn't want to pay back loans, right? That already is a machlokas. But prison, as qua punishment, would be out of bounds. That is the conclusion of Rav Moshe Tzuriel. If you look in 24, you don't have to go farther than the title. Ma'asar bebeit ha-soar, onesh pasul al pi ha-torah. Prison, according to the Torah, an invalid punishment. Right? Right? That's the title. Right? I'll read my English translation of it here for time. He says, it is indeed the case that the Torah has corporal punishments such as lashes and even four kinds of death. He said, look, I get it. The Torah's punishments aren't pretty. Beheading, stoning, kippah, right? Making the guy die from his innards exploding. It's not pretty. However, the punishment of imprisonment, which extends for years, is a sadistic punishment, right? That's his words, not mine, right? Onesh sadisti, right? Yes, sadistic is a Hebrew word. Fine. It is a continuous torture, right? Inui mit mashech, worse than these just mentioned. He said it is against the Torah spirit. It's better to put the guy to death than put him in prison for extended periods of time. Then he has a whole aside in the middle, which I didn't put here. It says, then why is it what people would rather be in prison than be put to death? He says, because people don't realize how bad prison is. You would rather die than be there, right? Have a life sentence. He said, it is a cruel punishment which is not written in the Torah. The institution of prison based on Torah sources is only for ensuring the prisoner does not escape before he can be judged, or to force him to fulfill that which the court has commanded him to do. Under no circumstances is it proper to use it as punishment. The spiritual and psychological anguish that result from it are unbearable to carry. And then he also says that he notes, this is my summary. The only cases in Torah he mentions are the blasphemer and the woodcutter. We were dealing with holding cells for guilty parties, or, as he notes, the Netziv thinks to protect the criminal. And your point, Ir Miklat, that's not prison. You're putting him in a normal city with his family. He just is limited to a city, but it's a normal functioning city with other people, right? This is not Australia for the Brits, right? This is not only criminals being shipped off to a beautiful country, right? As a holding cell, right?
But there is Cleveland. I have to remember
that. Okay, fair enough. Right? And he says that you're allowed to have temporary imprisonment to force people to do things, as we've seen, based on Psachim and Kadan, but prison and the punishment is invalid. Reb Chaim David HaLevi as well. Here he adds an argument. Now it's all my summaries. Reb Chaim David HaLevi says, I don't think prison is good because in Torah punishment is rehabilitative and not retributive, which that I'm not sure is true. I wrote a whole article on that, which is supposed to come in tradition at some point. I'm not really sure when. But he says, the cities of refuge are fine because they rehabilitate the person, but prison isn't. And he says, besides, prison is counterproductive. Even slavery in the Torah is meant to rehabilitate, right? The master is supposed to help him, give him money when he leaves to become a functioning member of society. The case of recidivism in prison is absurd, right? One of the arguments against prison in the States is that it's something like a 2/3 recidivism rate, right? They are more likely to be criminals because they went to prison. I mean, right, going back to prison. To the point where, in the States, we have this bizarre system of private prisons where they tell their investors to invest in them because there's a high recidivism rate, so you're sure to get your money back, right? It's, right, as he said, it doesn't make sense as a punishment. He said, yes, certain kind of murderers, or which I didn't talk about, people who hire hitmen, fine, we put them in kippah and we kill them through kippah, but that's A, basically the death penalty, and B, that's only for murderers and dangerous people who we need to keep away from society. And then after saying it's bad, it's bad, it's bad, Sanhedrin Memvav. But Bezdin Makin Vonchin Shalom and Adin, and if the courts would deem it necessary, in theory it would be good. He doesn't like it, but he says in theory, if the courts deemed it necessary, you could find a basis for it. Rav Asher Weiss says, again, we have evidence for holding cells. We have mixed evidence of how much proof you need. He said, bail, right? Michilda says you can't use bail, so instead use holding cell. But Rav Asher says, I'm not sure that's true. He said, I think that's up to the discretion of the court. Right? He thinks you could use bail. You don't always have to use a holding cell. He thinks it depends what's going to motivate the person. He also says that we have very limited examples in Sanhedrin of prison as punishment, but again, that's more the death penalty. But at the end of the day, he also comes back to it. He says the Torah doesn't really have sources for it, but Bezdin Makin Vonchin Shalom and Adin, if they deem it necessary, they could set up prisons. But he does note, and this is based on that original point, that the Mekalel and the Megadev weren't put in the same cell. So he says, even if you deem it necessary and you think that modern Israel should have prisons, the Torah tells you don't put criminals of vastly different crimes in the same cell. It's not fair to the person caught, you know, petty larcening to be put in the cell with a murderer. Because even if you decide it's necessary, you need a little bit of kindness. And the Torah tells you, don't put people, right, who, wait, one is a much worse person, in a cell with someone not as bad, because that's sadistic. So that is the qualifier he puts on it. The Rav Tzvi ben Yaakov, who was an Av Beis Din in Tel Aviv, in his Sefer Mishpatech LeYaakov, notes that despite the fact that the Torah doesn't seem to like prison, the Ritva in several places does say that there were temporary decrees throughout the ages to use prisons. So he notes that even though, yes, the Torah itself doesn't have this basis, there's a history of people deciding it was necessary for their time and place, and therefore they do use it, and it's potentially fine. Reb Lipa Kaminer, I put in 28, again, don't imprison people who committed different crimes in the same cell. He thinks you can imprison people to question even before it's been proven, but there has to be reasonable basis to assume the crime has been committed, not just a mere accusation. He knows historically it has been used for the repayment of loans. Again, Beis Din Machen von Shalom Ben Adin, if it's necessary, you can use it. But again, if you're going to do it, keep in mind the importance of human dignity, because punishment is not meant to be retributive. Again, I'm not sure that's true, but that's his assumption. And the Tzitz Eliezer in 29 says you should use prison and not bail. It can be used to force people to do what Beis Din told them. There's a machlokas about the repayment. It can be used for the murderers who can't be convicted, but that's really a death penalty. But again, he thinks that courts can decide to institute prison, but it has to be for the sake of heaven. So what basically came out is you have very little evidence in Torah for prison, besides for holding cells, to force people to listen to the court, but not as retribution. You can use it as this, you know, backhanded death penalty for murderers. Fine. That led some authorities, like Moshe Tzuriel, like Chaim David Halevi, to say, really, we should avoid prisons in a Jewish state. And then you have Rav Asher Weiss, Reb Kaminer, right, and others who know that despite all that evidence, there is history of people using prison on an ad hoc basis. If the Jewish state decides it is necessary, they have the right to institute it. But the one thing they have to keep in mind is a kol hashem shamayim. And even when you're going to do that, remember, there's a reason that prison wasn't a Torah thing, and there's a reason it's being questioned in the Western world. So even if you're going to do it, you should do it in the right way, and try to maintain people's dignity. But again, as all of them know, the Torah really didn't like it, presumably for all the reasons it's now been questioned in the Western world overall.